Hey Kyle here. I am so excited for another one of our Stories That Matter videos. Today I have the privilege of sitting down virtually and interviewing Brian Bolton. Brian, for those who don't know you, why don't you help them get to know you a little bit?
The one thing that Kyle and I have a connection is that we're both Michigan fans.
Yeah.
So that's one good thing. He's way out on the coast and here I'm in Kentucky. So we've both been transplanted, but I'm born and raised in Michigan and grew up a Michigan fan. Grew up with parents that are just kind of your normal everyday parents. Dad worked in a trucking driving business. My mom worked in kind of an office type work. And so just an ordinary guy, just trying to do kingdom work. I think about the book of Acts in Acts chapter 4, where Peter and John were before the Sanhedrin and they were being tested and on trial. And what they say, you know, they said they're ordinary guys who have been with Jesus. So I'm an ordinary guy who tries to be with Jesus. And hopefully that's what people see.
Man, that's a good way for people to get to know you a little bit. Now, you said you were from Michigan, but now you're pastoring a church in Kentucky. So help people just connect those dots. How did you get from Michigan to Kentucky?
I went to school in Ohio, Cincinnati Bible College and seminary. And then I was a youth pastor in Findlay, Ohio for about 7 years. And the church in Kentucky called and said, would you come and serve with us on our staff? And so I packed up and we moved to Kentucky in 2000. I was serving on that staff and they had a church planning group. And they said, would you consider being part of helping us find the next church planter? And eventually they looked at me and said, you're the guy. So that's been my journey. I just stay along I-75. If you're familiar with I-75, it runs from Florida to Michigan. If I stay on that highway, I do pretty good.
Brian, you are the lead pastor of Centerpoint Christian Church. How old is Centerpoint now?
Oh man, Centerpoint's getting ready to turn 17.
Wow.
Getting ready to turn 17. We launched the first Sunday of November in 2004. So this November of 2021, we'll be 17 years old. So we are a teenager church.
Well, I think that's a good analogy. And people have all kinds of visions when they hear the term church planting. And so one of the questions that I've just been asking to each guy or couple that I've interviewed is, what is church planting? So Brian, what is church planting?
I think for me, when I think about church planting, it's an opportunity to take the gospel, the kingdom of God, into new regions, using new methods, but not changing the message. For me, I was intrigued when someone said, would you plant a church? And you start thinking about how, oh, I don't have to deal with stained glass windows, or I don't have to deal with pews, or I don't have to deal with ties and suits, or I don't have to deal with, are we going to do hymns? I mean, I can create it from scratch. Doesn't mean the message changed. The message is still the same. Jesus is the Savior. There's only one way to the Father. It's through Jesus Christ. But boy, the methods. I mean, I watch you guys and I learn from you guys because you guys are doing methods that I would never dream of doing. And now that 17 years old, it gets harder to create new methods because people get used to your methods and they're like, wait, I love that method. And so we know how we are. Most people don't like change, right? And so when you try to change something up, it gets a little more difficult. And me included, I get used to certain things. And so trying to change and do something different is a little hard. So when I looked at church plan, I was like, I could take the gospel to a new region, a new area, and try new methods, keep the same message. So for me, it's an opportunity for us to reach people. There are some methods that today just will not reach people who are far from Jesus. They just won't. And they're going to look at you and go, there's no way I'm participating. But if you try a new method, maybe that'll work.
All right. So you got to give us an example with that. What is a method that you did when you were starting Centerpoint that you think might not work today? And what is something, if you were starting a church today, that you would probably do or try?
Well, the thing I think about that's kind of funny is when I started Centerpoint, I came from a church that was a suit wearing church. Matter of fact, I got in trouble one time because I walked up on the platform, the stage, and I wasn't wearing a suit and tie. I didn't know the rule. And the pastor called me in his office the next day and said, you have to wear a suit and tie. Go down to the suit store. We got it set up, buy two suits. And I was like, he said, if you're on a platform, you got to be in a suit and tie. I hate a suit and ties. Now remember, this is 17, 18 years ago, right? 19 years ago. So when we started the church, we said no suit and ties. I'm a jean and, you know, t-shirt kind of guy. And so I remember my kids were little. One time we were driving to church and the kids in the back seat asked something about, "Dad, why don't we dress up for church anymore?" And I said, "Well, do you want to wear a suit and tie?" They're like, "No, we don't want to do that." So that was a method that we changed when we started Centerpoint. Now a lot of churches are doing that. Now suit and ties are kind of gone by the wayside. So that was a method that we changed then, or a method of in music. I mean, I grew up with hymns, you know, piano and a hymn. And that's what I grew up with. But, you know, what do we do now? And again, many churches are doing this, mm-hmm. but, you know, we have the guitars and the drums and, you know, the music style has changed. So that's a different method. So I think if I were trying to start a church today, I would move away from the big gathering meeting every week on Sunday. I think I would have big gatherings of the church gathering together, but we spend so much time and energy for the big gathering that we lose out on disciple making. And so I think I would get rid of the big gathering. I would do that occasionally. Would that be once a month or maybe once a quarter? I'm not sure. And I'd much more emphasize being in groups of 3 to 5, like discipling groups, or groups of about 5 to 12, or maybe 2 groups where you're really kind of living out, studying the word, you're living out, being the hands and feet of Jesus in your community or city, but still come together for kind of a celebration, because there's energy and there's an excitement to go, look at, there's Christians together. We're all in the same city. We're all serving together. But like in this COVID situation right now, you know, we're trying to get back to a weekly gathering, and I already feel the struggle. And I just wonder sometimes if we shouldn't blow that up and go, hey, let's just go with a periodically gathering as the whole, but meet much more in smaller groups. I don't think I could maybe make that transition in our current setting. A new church plant, they could do that today.
Connect the dots. How was God preparing you to start a new church? And you may have not even realized it before you started Centerpoint.
When I grew up in church, and I was a nursery baby, so I was raised in a church. I grew up in a church where they had pews on both sides and they had a middle aisle. And we had men who would serve the communion and collect the offering plates. And they would, there was this procedure where they would come walking down the middle aisle and they would divide, go to the left and go to the right. And they all were wearing their suits and ties. And we were singing a song when that would happen. Well, I was about 12 years old and they asked me to help serve one time. I didn't have a suit and tie on, just jeans. I said, sure, I'll help if you guys don't mind me not being in a suit. They let me do that. I went home and my mom chewed me up one side and the other. How can you serve the Lord? You weren't dressed up. You didn't look right. And we argued about that. I remember as a young kid arguing, but every Sunday they'd ask me, Brian, hey, will you help serve community? Will you help collect the offering? There I am in my jeans, you know? And so those guys welcomed me as a young teenager into their club where they're in their suits, not knowing one day I'd be preaching in a pair of jeans or a pair of Dockers or something more casual. So that was just, I think, the beginning point of connecting the dots. But then when I was a youth pastor, I was at a church that was 100+ years old, very traditional. I get really frustrated with how they did ministry. I was like, why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? And I'd want to quit or want to change it. And it was like bumping my head up against a brick wall. And I used to say, I'm going to go start a church just to show them how to do it. And it was totally the wrong reasons. But there was just this angst inside of me, like it could be done different or it could be done better. And I thought, you know, as a young man, I knew all the answers, and I, you know, now I know I didn't know all the answers, but God had that stirring inside of me. Like, you got to keep reaching people and you got to find ways to reach people. And then when I was brought to Kentucky, I was blessed to be mentored for about 3 years by guys who had been in ministry for 20, 25, 30 years, who loved the Lord and they understood methods, but they also understood the passion of the gospel. And so they knew how to fan the flame of faith in me, like, keep growing, but don't let methods frustrate you. And so when the opportunity came to plant a church and my shoulder was tapped for that, I think God was preparing me along the way, some from frustration, some from young age of growing up, some from mentors who spoke into my life as like, okay, now you're ready to do this. So God helped connect those dots. And as I look back, I see that. I didn't see that when I was in the middle of that journey.
17 years in, what is the one or two things that you can say, man, I'm so glad, reasons that you could say, I'm so glad we started Centerpoint, and then just good reasons, and then just share with those who might watch us, like, what's been the most difficult part of the last 17 years?
A real personal reason is I think that's impacted my children greater than I'll ever understand. I think my kids, I have a, I have an 18-year-old daughter, and I have a 20-year-old son, and I have a 21-year-old son. And I think they're getting the idea of what we're supposed to be as the church. I think they're getting it. My oldest son is pursuing mission field work. Matter of fact, he left yesterday to move into his apartment, and he's on a 2-year journey right now. And he told me the other day, I think I'm doing this for my life, Dad. Mm-hmm. And so my middle son, who many of you know, because he served on staff there for a little while helping out Caleb, he's a little crazy. He's still on a path figuring it all out. But more and more, he's talking about kingdom type principles and work. And I think it's starting to, the dots are starting to connect. And my daughter, she's on a journey. The other day, she's sharing about a friend at work who she was inviting to church and she was sharing faith with, and to be 18 years old and thinking about that. So I think the fact we go out and plant a church, because the kids heard us talking about, why are we doing this all the time? What's the mission of the church? They heard it all the time. They didn't hear us complaining about church. They didn't hear us grumbling. They're just talking about what the work of the church is supposed to be, what kingdom. So they're excited about it. So I think, you know, a huge positive for me as a personal reason is that. I think the difficulty for me, because we are in Lexington, Kentucky, where there are many other churches. We're a city of 300,000 people. There's about 300 churches in this area. So unfortunately, people do a lot of what I call church shopping. You know, oh, you have this program, but they have this program. So there's kind of a rotation a lot. And I get frustrated with that versus having a kingdom mindset. And I think that's different sometimes when you go into areas that are unchurched, mostly unchurched areas. I don't know if there's as much. Of course, I'm not in that area, but I don't think there's as much of that that goes on. And so people around here have a preconceived idea of what the church is supposed to be and what we're supposed to look like. I had a young couple come to the church 2 weeks ago. I did their wedding about 3 months ago and stay in contact with them. And they don't know anything of church. So when they came in, they had all this preconceived ideas of what it was supposed to be and what it was supposed to look like. I talked to them afterward. And they're like, that was way different than we ever expected, because they had some touch of church growing up. So we battle that still continually. People come in and have expectations that they're not wrong expectations. Again, it comes back to methods. They're used to a certain kind of method, and maybe we don't participate in that method. So then some people, especially I'd say more church people, who get frustrated. And so I deal with too much of that in my time. I'd rather be dealing with people who are just trying to follow Jesus and people who don't know Jesus and walk in that journey. So the method thing becomes a theme, I think, or becomes a challenge.
You started a new church. It's been 17 years. But one of the things, Brian, that I've admired probably most about you is that you keep just beating the drum for new church planting. You could have planted Centerpoint and been like, sweet, I'm done, started a church, we're good. What made you keep investing in new church planting?
Well, from the day that we got involved in church planting, one of the thoughts that God instilled in me was, people are investing in you to make this happen, which they're investing in the kingdom, but they were investing in me to say, you go and do this work. And God instilled a thought in me that you must continue to do the same. You're being blessed, so you must be a blessing to others. And then as you start to study and you look at the heart of God, I think that our God is ascending God. If you go just to Genesis in the third chapter, God says, I'm going to send you a deliverer. And he's talking about Jesus. One day you're going to be delivered. And then Jesus is sent. And then you look at Jesus, and Jesus says to the disciples, I'm going to send you just as the Father has sent me. And he sends his disciples going to all the world. And they went two by two. And there's this continual sending mindset and thought in the scriptures. You go to the book of Acts, where Paul planted churches. And I know of at least five different times in the book of Acts where churches then sent people to go help and people to go plant churches. And so it's all over the scriptures. And so we said, when we started Centerpoint, we said, well, we're going to be a sending church. We're going to be a supporting church. We're going to be encouraging others. As we were preparing for this interview, I started thinking about, well, what churches have we helped with and what we worked with? We helped with a church in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, called The Ridge. And they've exploded. They're in a pretty unchurched area. They have a couple campuses now, a few thousand people. Who would think Centerpoint here in Lake Kentucky is working on the church, you know, that big? But it's like, hey, that was part of it. We have a church up in Findlay, Ohio, called Movement Church in Findlay. Why Findlay? Well, that's where I was a youth pastor at. And I was like, we have an opportunity to go back and invest in a city where I was a youth pastor. Hey, let's do that. We're partnering with Generations Church, and we partner with a church in Vegas, Walk Church. And all those churches are healthy ministries, various sizes, but it's like our ministry is so much greater because we've kept that mindset being generous and kept that mindset investing in church plants. But it really comes back to the heart of God. God's a sending God, and we should be sending people. I just don't think we should ever get comfortable and go, hey, we got who we want. Let's just sit here and be comfortable with everybody. Because if we have discovered salvation, then we're supposed to tell other people. If we've discovered hope, we're supposed to tell other people. And so this is part of who God has instilled in me and how he's made me. So, and as long as I'm the pastor, we'll keep pushing for us to be generous, especially towards church planters. We believe in helping missionaries and others, but we try to be extra generous in our church plants by sending funds, sending people where we can, giving, helping as needed.
Absolutely. And for some people, as they hear you talk about that, being a senior leader of a church, going, we believe in sending. And whether you're a member of a church or you're a leader of the church, I think the natural inclination is to go, man, so if we do this, we are giving something up. We are giving money. We are giving people time and energy into that. And they may not always realize the blessing that comes from the sending. So for those people, how is investing in new church planting strengthened Centerpoint?
You know, you said that, and I recalled a story when I was planting. I was serving on a staff. The church was about 1,000 member church on a given Sunday. And I hadn't been there very long, about 2.5 years, 2.5 years I was serving our staff. And I went to the lead pastor who had been there for about 35 years. And I said, I've been asked to plant this church on the other side of Lexington. And I was nervous about that. And his first reaction was, go, and we'll send people and we'll send dollars. Now I thought, well, maybe he's just, hey, there's an opportunity to get rid of a poor staff guy, you go. But it was really about having a sending mindset. And I said to him, his name was Wally Rendell, and he still preaches today. He's in his late 70s, early 80s, still preaching. I said, why do you do that? And he said, because God will bless us. He said, I guarantee you, God will bless us beyond anything we could ever imagine. And so he stood up in the pulpit one day and said, hey, we're going to help Brian Bolton plant a church on the other side of Lexington. And their leadership had committed to send $75,000 over a three-year journey. And they said, anybody who wants to go, you go. Go help him out. I mean, anybody, released anybody to go. And a few came, and they gave the dollars. And come back and talk to Wally a few years later, and he's like, yeah, God took care of us. God blessed us. Because you can't outgive God. And that's just a principle, again, throughout Scripture. We don't have time to dive into that completely. But I believe that as you give and you trust God in faith, he says, okay, I'll take care of you. And he just blesses us. And we've done that. We actually did that with a church plant here in Lexington. We were very young, and the planter came and spoke at our church, and we told people go. And we had people, couples that went. God replaced people. God replaced the dollars. God replaced the servants. Everything that we thought, hey, we're going to miss that. How are we going to do? God had it all in his hands. So it's a huge faith step, because it is scary. Like if Generation Church starts thinking, hey, we want to plant other churches, and that means we're going to have to send some people. And that means maybe we're going to lose one of our musicians, or we're going to lose a nursery worker, or we're going to lose one of our Bible group leaders, or we're going to lose a small group host. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? That's where your faith is really tested. Like, do I really believe this church belongs to God? If it belongs to me, I'm going to hold on to all that. I'm going to keep all that in my own little huddle. If it belongs to God, I say, all right, God, you're leading us to go. I'm going to go. And God has blessed us. Every time we have given or supported, God has blessed us tremendously. And don't have the time to get into all those examples. But so God blesses, and then God strengthens. I think, though, on a smaller scale, that it helps us keep an outward focus. When I say to our church, hey, we're going to help with this church plant, and we're going to Salmon Creek, Washington, people are like, what? So that creates conversation of why we're going, why we're doing what we do, because God wants us to go. The Great Commission says we must go. Go where? Go into all the world. So then you have conversations around coffee, you have conversations from the pulpit, you have conversations in small group. And so it keeps an outward focus. Every time we've gone, our outward focus, because people say, well, shouldn't we be doing this in our own community? Shouldn't we talk to neighbors? Yes. Yes, reach. Exactly. So we're thinking about the whole idea that the church is supposed to be on the go, supposed to be outward. It strengthens our faith. Greatly strengthens your faith. And I think it creates generosity. I want the church to be a generous church. We've given more away to missions this year than we have in the life of our church ever any other year before, in a year of COVID, because God keeps blessing. And we just believe that if God has blessed, it's our job to be a conduit and let it flow right through us, right? Let it flow right through us. So those are just a few things I think it strengthens the church: faith, generosity, and the outward focus.
Brian, this has been just an encouraging conversation. I always welcome hearing your thoughts, and I'm encouraged for just to really just unveil this in another piece of our Stories That Matter series, where we're talking to different church planners that we are connected with. So thanks, Brian, for sitting down with me, and Generations is better because of you.
You're welcome. Thank you. I enjoy it.